you think about how much better can the world be and how much can I contribute to that? And I think when you live all your life in the emerging market, and you know, the Philippines has never been seen as a leading light globally, not in technology, not in innovation. When there's there's so many problems in the world, there's so many problems around you, and you think, what can you do in terms of offering concrete solutions at scale? And I wonder if some of my journey to where I am is about trying to understand what my limits are, maybe, but also trying to understand what contribution can I make that is useful, but also, frankly, fun and exciting for me.
Welcome to The Idealists. My name is Melissa Kigua, and I'm spanning the globe, interviewing the world's most high-achieving women to learn how they think about the world and their place in it. These women are charting their own path, and on the show, they share their hard-earned and hard-won wisdom gained along the way. On today's episode, I interview Minette Navarette, the president and vice chairman of Kickstart Ventures, the corporate venture capital arm of Globe Telecom, the largest mobile network in the Philippines, and one of the largest fixed line and broadband networks. Not only does Minette manage Kickstart Ventures' $180 million fund, she is also a member of Globe's Innovation Advisory Board and is a member of the board of directors of AdSpark, Globe's wholly owned digital advertising subsidiary. Minette has held a number of CEO, COO positions in various industries, ranging from scrappy Philippine startups to iconic global companies like Levi Strauss in the Philippines. I wanted to interview Minette because, to be frank, I love women who manage a lot of money. I don't know what more I can say. Enjoy the show.
Two widely held beliefs that I absolutely disagree with. The first one is a tenet in startup life: fake it till you make it. I think that is absolutely the wrong way to go about growth. And the other one is another widely held belief about, you know, to be successful in tech, you've got to be in Silicon Valley or somewhere else, first world. And ideally, I guess the belief is you've got to be Caucasian, male, with an MBA from one of the Ivy League schools. I think competence, commitment, and credibility go a long way towards helping deliver success. I mean, there's room for differing styles and profiles and backgrounds, but really talent, trustworthiness, truthfulness, I think, are much more important than faking it till you make it.
Have you seen examples of entrepreneurs trying to fake it till they make it?
I think the startup world is rife with that. One of our mentors talks about being Wizard of Oz. And it is disappointing when you've found something that you have been impressed with and you start to do diligence and you try and understand what they've done, what they have. Does the tech deliver? Is the product liked by its customers? And you realize that maybe the data isn't quite so truthful as it ought to be, or maybe the tech isn't really there and many of the results are made up and unreliable. And it isn't always the case, but I think it is such a disservice to tell people that they ought to fake it till they make it, because actually there is such a lot of goodness and beauty in being truthful and in understanding that in the beginning there is nothing, that there's an idea that's being created and being brought to life, but in the beginning there's not very much of it, and that's fine.
Let's dig into this, because it seems like we're in a moment, and I'm not quite sure what this looks like in the Philippines. You can tell me. Here in the US, there's big coverage around Adam Neumann with WeWork.
Yes.
With the CEO of Uber, or the former CEO of Uber, Elizabeth Holmes, Theranos. I mean, there's podcasts, there's shows, there's documentaries. It's a moment, you know, of really seeing sort of the unicorn that wasn't. And so I'm curious what that looks like in terms of the ecosystem you're in. I know that there are a number of amazing entrepreneurs that are truthful, but can you dig in a little bit more and tell us about your experience with that?
I think in Southeast Asia, we have seen a few companies where the numbers that have from a distance looked quite impressive and have had notable investors becoming interested. When you dig a little deeper, you realize that the numbers are not quite as they were made out to be. And I think there are a couple of live cases that we've seen in Philippines and Singapore across the region where the results have not been quite as they've been reported. Let's put it that way. Difficult to name names because some of these are under investigation by their boards or by other investors who were doing diligence. And I think it's unfortunate because actually, the concepts are good. The founders are smart. It's perhaps just that they were impatient and could have worked a bit harder, could have waited a bit longer. It saddens me because I think what it does is a disservice to the rest of the ecosystem. There are many, many more startups that are genuinely delivering the performance that they publicize, that they share. They will sometimes not do a perfect job. They will sometimes need to pivot, but the numbers are factful. And I think you're right. It is a bit of a moment where people are trying to impress with numbers that are inaccurate. But I think we, over time, we ought to get over that and understand that the whole concept of a startup is that there is no guarantee.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm interested. I've been having a lot of conversations with friends about this because as I've been in the sort of startup world myself, I have a bit more empathy for the liars. And it's not, you know, it's not morally sound to say, but you know, the pressure to build something that can have multiples or 500x multiples, right? In a finite reality. Sometimes there can be a disconnect. I you know, you can't mention it. So I'll give the example that's widely known of Theranos and Elizabeth Holmes. And as I've sort of watched the story unfold and listened, I think to myself, oh, well, really, the path that she would have been on to really accomplish what she said she could do was to be an unknown professor at maybe Stanford or Columbia for 20 years, plugging away. And in 20 years, she would have popped up with this amazing thing that she'd been working on in complete obscurity and maybe won a Nobel Prize for, but wouldn't have necessarily, you know, been on the board of Harvard or have made all the money that she did or be in all the Walgreens, right? But she didn't want that path. And I think that's where we start to see the morally ethical problems show up, because the desire for, you know, some sort of fame, or the desire for whether she was financially motivated or whatnot. But there is a part of me that, you know, in this world of the pressure of we want the 10x, we want the 20x, we want the 50x.
No, you're right. And I do get that. I'm not unsympathetic. And you know, sometimes it isn't even a negative motivation. Sometimes it's the problems of this world are massive and urgent. And you can imagine how much good can be done if Theranos had lived up to its promise. There's just so much urgency to solving the problems of the world. So I am a big fan of the publicity. I am a big believer in being able to amplify the message, having ambitious goals, and reaching for that. And I think it's especially true for women, because for the most part, we are taught, certainly in Asia, that we've got to be much more modest, much more self-effacing, you know, delivering quietly. So I have no fights to pick about being loud and proud. But I do think when you mislead, whether it's customers or investors or partners, then it becomes problematic because you undo all the good that you could be delivering.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Well, I'd love to talk about the companies that are doing what they say they're doing. And, you know, and I'd love to learn more about the entrepreneurial ecosystem in the Philippines and in the region where you are, because I understand you don't just invest in the Philippines. You're quite international. So I'd love to hear, maybe even before we go there and talk about your work, I'd love to hear more about your personal story. How did you get into entrepreneurship? How did you get into venture capital? And tell us a bit about you.
Gosh. So I have come to venture capital from a very unusual path. I think for many people, they have a clear view about what their career is going to be. And that's not me. I think what I've been is curious. I have had a lot of questions about what I might be able to do, what I could do. I'm one of these kids who had a lot of structure and direction from my academic background from high school and college. And after that, thinking, if you're told in college that you can do whatever you're interested in, then what am I interested in? And I realized what I was interested in was to learn, to gain certain experiences and skills. And that's kind of how I pursued my career. I started out in FMCG, so I did a number of years, about a decade in Unilever and in L'Oreal. And then I did a decade in property and apparel. So I ran Shangri-La Plaza, the shopping center in the Philippines, affiliated with the Shangri-La Hotels Group. I ran Levi Strauss for Philippines and Guam for a little bit.
What does it mean you ran, like you were?
Us country head.
Perfect. Got it. Mm-hmm.
And then I guess for a while, I thought the gift that I had and the interest that I had was turning companies around. So companies that were on the decline. And, you know, for context, I had joined Levi Strauss in 2000. And at the time, it was in decline globally. And certainly the Philippine business had been in decline for 7 years. And I thought if I could turn that around, that would be, you know, it's a wonderful global brand. It invented the category. It was a similar story for Shangri-La Plaza. It was not profitable when I joined it. So for a while, I thought what I wanted to do was fix things, fix companies. But after 2 decades of doing FMCG and property and apparel, I thought I had never done anything digital. I had not gotten any experience in what you would have called the new economy. And I thought I'd had enough experience that if I tried it and I failed miserably, I could pick myself up and rebuild my career. And so I joined a startup that was publishing MMORPGs, you know, those massively multimedia online role-playing games. And having run it for 1.5 years, it got acquired. And I joined the telco, but I joined the telco, Globe Telecom, not to be a telco person, but to try and do innovation and digital. And that's kind of what led to starting out with the blueprint for taking a plain old telephone service, pure play mobile service provider, and looking at digital, whether that was online or social media. It was fun. It was different. And doing it in the Philippines, you know, the Philippines has always been open to adopting innovative technology. Once upon a time, it was the SMS capital of the world, and then it became the social media capital of the world, and then it was most recently called the selfie capital of the world. And so the Philippines is just such a good place for understanding, for experimenting, for testing things that are new, just such an embrace of novelty. And there's always been a bit of an entrepreneurial edge, I guess, for Philippines. You only need to see how many business ideas and business models emerge from the country. Play to earn, which is quite a recent evolution for games and NFT, is something that was very big in the Philippines, had started out and had gotten, I think, the first investment from Andreessen Horowitz for a Philippine company. So that's kind of the context, I guess, into which I explored different areas and found myself in venture capital, but building it out of telco. So it's Kickstart Ventures is in fact corporate venture capital. We're wholly owned by Globe Telecom. But we spun ourselves out and have been, I think, as independent as a corporate venture capital firm can be. We're on to our third fund that we launched in 2020. And this third fund, the Active Fund, is something that has for its LPs, not just Globe Telecom, but the parent company and affiliates under the conglomerate. So Ayala Corporation, which was the first business house in the Philippines. It's, had its origins in over 7 generations ago. So
how big is the fund?
The third fund is $180 million.
I love this, Manette. I love this. Before jumping into some of the kind of companies that you invest in, was the process of, you know, going between different sort of careers or jobs, was it seamless? Or, you know, was there some soul searching in there? Were there some days of being like, what am I doing? I find that people have two different experiences. One is like, everyone has always wanted me, you know, where it's like they leave a job, they're in a job within 2 weeks, you know, like or they're being headhunted while they're at a job. And then other folks who, you know, get out of a job, it takes 6 months or it takes a year and they find their way. So how has it been for you, or how was it for you?
So, you know, when you say seamless, it suggests smooth. I think it's seamless in the sense that I've never had gaps, but these are pretty rough and ready seams. And it always looks so much more logical when you look backwards. Because you know how I said a lot of my career I built because I was curious and exploring and wanted to learn, could I do tech? Was the last question I had. But before that, it was, could I survive a telco, which is supposed to be super intense? And before that, it was, could I turn around an apparel company? So it's this series of curious questions that when you look backwards, it all looks pretty smooth and seamless and logical. But I can tell you that the transitions from one to another have always had an element of uncertainty, ambiguity, an element of chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good thing for me. One of my friends had said when she was transitioning from one job and just ready to move on, she'd said, I don't know where I'm going, but I hope it's somewhere chaotic.
Uh-huh.
And I think that resonates with me, I think. Partly because I think there is value that I bring from sense-making, but also partly because there's such a lot of energy in something that is chaotic and unexplored. It appeals to me.
I'm curious as to what the chaos has looked like, but I definitely understand, you know, and I think also, you know, you grow that muscle of taking calculated risks, sometimes calculated, maybe sometimes not so much, but you really learn to activate the muscle the more you do it and the more you learn how to throw yourself into something.
Also, I think you think about how much better can the world be and how much can I contribute to that? And I think when you live all your life in the emerging market, and you know, the Philippines has never been seen as a leading light globally, not in technology, not in innovation. When there's such a lot of, there's so many problems in the world, there's so many problems around you, and you think, what can you do in terms of offering concrete solutions at scale? And I wonder if some of my journey to where I am is about trying to understand what my limits are, maybe, but also trying to understand what contribution can I make that is useful, but also, frankly, fun and exciting for me?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Love it. So now coming back to this fund that you are managing, tell me about your day-to-day. What does it look like?
There isn't a day that is the same as any other day. I do try and set aside time to talk to my team one-on-one as well as group. And this year, I am trying to make more time to, A, keep up with founders, have conversations, see what they're doing, and B, more time to mentor other women primarily who've come forward and said, can you make time? Can we have these conversations? Can we understand how you are sailing into the unknown? And why does it look from the outside like it's all calm? And I think as we get more experience and we have more to share, it makes sense to make time for these things. I've not had great control of my calendar, and I've frequently double booked and triple booked myself. So life can be pretty frenetic. But as the company's grown and I've tried to get a better handle on my time, I am redirecting my time and my energies to do more one-on-ones in order to see how we can amplify the impacts that we make.
How often are you listening to pitches?
Because we've gotten a slightly bigger team, I will probably see, I'm going to guess about maybe 50 pitches in a year, because the team has seen the 800 or so pitches that have come through the company. So we're looking to reach out further. As you know, we've made investments in Canada, in Israel, in Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, of course, the United States, Philippines. We've got some really wonderful startups everywhere. And you learn such a lot from seeing things from their perspective.
What are the companies that really excite you, especially in Southeast Asia? What are some of the innovations you're seeing, the paradigm shifting companies that you say, wow, I mean, game changers?
Gosh, so this is going to be very biased because of the investments we've made. One of the companies we invested in a couple of years ago is a Philippine company called Kumu, K-U-M-U. And Kumu is long-form video streaming with creator economy features built in. So when you think about, everybody has heard about TikTok, but TikTok is very short form. Kumu has all the same mobile video streaming features, but it's long form. It's people who might be talking about their hobby or might be singing, might be kind of busking digitally, but they have grown their audience and they have grown their performers enough that they have gotten much more diverse channel lineup and a lot more interest from audiences both in the Philippines and outside. And the ethos is to build entertainment that feels like digital Disneyland, meaning a broad selection and safe and wholesome, which isn't something that a lot of video streaming, whether short form or long form, prioritizes. So the founders, Roland Ross and Rexy Dorado, have done such a lot with that. And what one of their key metrics is creators who are financially viable. Can they build an app that becomes a platform for creators to be 100% full-time for and economically viable? And they had a couple of dozen, I think, when we first invested in them. They've got over 1,000 creators who are now full-time and finding it financially viable for themselves to be full-time. So that's kind of one experience where you see that it's very different from other come up with other examples around the world. But equally, we see a lot of fintech coming out of the Philippines and Southeast Asia in general. And while in the beginning, a lot of fintech was payment gateways, these days, we're looking at use cases for small and medium scale businesses. So a company like Flex out of Singapore, or a company like NextPay out of the Philippines. These are companies that are building out applications for small companies, maybe micro, maybe mom and pop companies that are trying to move from traditional business to digital and using tools. How do you use digital tools when you don't have a full IT department in your company, when maybe it's the owner setting up? So I like these companies that change how one might traditionally see technology or finance or entertainment. So that's kind of what has come out of Philippines and Southeast Asia. And to be honest, one of my favorite themes is something that's come out of our third fund. And this is a thesis about the future that we call a world of plenty. And the thesis behind that is, you know, it's 2022 and we have so much scarcity in the world. Not enough food, not enough water, not enough energy. And yet when you think that these scarcities are not supply problems, but distribution problems, then you get a sense of how you might approach solving the problem, because technology is pretty good at solving distribution problems. And so we're looking at solutions for maybe potable water or affordable energy or clean air. Our most recent investment is a company out of San Francisco, in fact, called Clarity. And they are an air quality monitoring service that uses hardware and software and data to give real-time policy-grade air quality readings so that people and companies and cities and communities can make decisions about whether it's safe to send the kids to school or whether a company is complying with regulation. So that's exciting to me, because when you think about a better future, clean air has got to be one of the topmost things about how we can make a better world for future generations, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, 100%. That is really exciting. That is really exciting. I forgot to ask, what are your check sizes? What are your investment check sizes?
We typically will write a check between $1 to $10 million. So early stage, early growth. Occasionally, it'll be before Series A. So typically, I guess sweet spot for us is between Series A to Series C.
Yeah, no, that's really exciting to hear. I suppose the question that I have for you, you know, you mentioned that when you mentor, people are looking on the outside saying, how do you make it seem like there are no waves? How do you make it seem so, you know, that it's so calm? And I am wondering, you've spoken to us about the opportunities, but what are the things that keep you up at night, if they do? What are the things that sort of make you say, that's hard? That's hard to do what we do in the part of the world we're in.
I think the geography and the economics of Southeast Asia, right? Southeast Asia is spread out. It isn't homogeneous. It's whether it is through geography, through topography, or through culture and language. These are such diverse markets, and the economics will tend to mean that the relative value and cost of digital versus other services, manual approaches, mean that digital solutions aren't always intuitively the first ones. And in many cases, countries in Southeast Asia, it's almost like the Philippines is almost like it's two countries. There's a small one where the infrastructure and the purchasing power are very similar to first world. And then there's a large economy that has all the features you expect of the emerging market. Infrastructure that isn't quite so connected, limited cash outlay possibilities. And you have to bridge all that. I think you have to think about solutions that work for everybody. I think that's what makes it special. But that is what keeps me up at night.
Is the economic sort of inequity there, the wide gap, and how do you bring a whole country along, right?
Yes. And I think that is the problem worth solving.
Yeah. Yeah. So fascinating. So interesting. What does excite you about Kickstarter? I mean, you've not in terms of the company, but in terms of the problems you can solve. I suppose, how do you see yourself in it, driving that forward?
Well, what appeals to me is the chaos and the fact that this uncharted territory. If you're sitting in the U.S., then startups and venture capital are kind of, you know, everybody's heard of them. And I don't mean just in the sense of Shark Tank or Dragon's Den or Silicon Valley, but people have heard of startups and venture capital and have a sense of how that functions. It's not the case in the Philippines. There's no template. There is no playbook for corporate venture capital. There is no roadmap. Everything's to be created. And while that's hard, that's also exciting. I love the fact that venture capital is about investing in potential with no guaranteed outcomes, where stuff isn't obvious, isn't clear-cut, because I think that's where value can be created and real problems can be solved. You find the potential to make the world a better, safer, cleaner place. You can create abundance. And I think that's worth your time.
I love that. Is that your audacious vision for the future?
You know, when you think about an audacious vision, I think for myself, my dream is for emerging markets to lead technology innovation. Not exclusively, but certainly to be an equal partner for tech and tech innovation and solutions for the world's problems. At Kickstart, we talk about Southeast Asia becoming a region where founders can achieve their greatest ambitions and where massive success is possible. And I think that's my audacious vision. I think that's the hope, that by taking what we have and working with others, whether in the region or outside the region, in corporations or in startups, that we're able to overcome the barriers and build bridges across that make it possible to solve the world's wicked problems. I think surely that's what's worth waking up for every day.
So that folks are not just saying, wow, the stuff coming out of Silicon Valley, but people saying, wow, the stuff coming out of the Philippines, wow, you know, that is our global narrative and our global conversation.
Yeah, I don't think we'll find ourselves in a situation where, let's say, a Silicon Valley or Israel or some other current innovation hub is less of a player. I think there'll always be wonderful, awesome innovation coming out of those areas. But I'd love for emerging markets like the Philippines, like Southeast Asia, to play a role as well.
I see. I absolutely understand. Minette, thank you so much for your time. It was very lovely hearing from you and wonderful hearing about your work. And it's so inspiring to know that, you know, these exciting innovations are coming out of Southeast Asia and in general. And looking forward to just keeping track of what you do and what you are involved in. If people want to reach out, learn more, you know, how do they do that with you?
So I'm on Twitter. I'm at Padme001, and I do respond. I've gotten pitches via Twitter. I'm also on LinkedIn, Minette Navarrete. And otherwise, I mean, anybody who reaches out to us via our website, so info@kickstart.ph, we'll always respond.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thank you for having us. It's fun. I'm enjoying listening to the idealists and hope to meet some of these idealists too.
Absolutely. Okay, take care.
You take care. Thanks, Melissa.
Love this episode? Make sure to give us a rating and review on Apple iTunes. The Idealists is sponsored by LC, the London School of Economics Accelerator for Women Founders.